All right, Monday at noon, the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show debuts on the Premier Network. It's on like 400 stations. It is filling the spot left vacant by Rush Limbaugh. We were lucky enough to hook up with our friend Buck this week and spent a little time with him. Buck Sexton on today's Callahan podcast, brought to you as always by DCU. And Cullinane's back. It's good to see you. Let's do this, Cullinane.
This is the Jerry Callahan Podcast.
All right, joining us now is our friend Buck Sexton, former CIA intelligence officer, syndicated radio host, and soon-to-be co-host of the Noon to 3 show, which is replacing. I know you're not, you don't actually replace Rush Limbaugh. We know nobody replaces Rush Limbaugh, but you are stepping in to that slot with Clay Travis at noontime on Monday. Buck, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's exciting.
Big job. I know you can handle it because we talked a lot about on our show, we talked a lot about this job, this opening. Obviously, Rush was sick for a long time. Rush passed away, and then it was a big story in the media world, and your name came up, at least when I talked about it, every time. There's a handful of people, including Dan Bongino and others, and my thought was Buck could do 3 hours alone standing on his head. I mean, you do it all the time. You are one of the best soloists in the business, but here you are sharing the stage with Clay Travis. Was this a surprise? Did that come out of left field for you when you got the call? Did you think, well, I could do it. I'm ready to do it. But then they say, we're pairing you with another guy, a guy named Clay Travis. What's your first thought?
I was just excited, honestly. I mean, as you already brought up, and, Dan Bongino is a friend. He's a great guy, does a great show. And there are some others who are going into the noon radio space as well. And some of them, I don't really know at all. And a couple of them are friends of mine. I'll just leave it at that. But Dan's a good man, and I was so excited at the opportunity to step in. I mean, I like to say following in Rush's footsteps in some way, or we avoid the R word. Like, there's no replacing,
right?
And I understood why they thought that this would be, if you're going to try to create enough value for the listener, that they feel like they're getting something of that's different, but of reasonably similar value for their time. Bringing in somebody with a sports background as well as an entrepreneurial and legal background. That's what sort of Clay brings to the picture from a professional standpoint. And then I've got not only political radio for now 10 years, but also a national security background. It felt like we cover a lot of ground. We're kind of combining two audiences. And, we just feel like that was the best move to get the stations the most excited about it. Yeah. And just, I get iHeart's vision on this. I understand why they went with it. And I was just excited to be a part of it.
See, I like it. I think it'll work. I was a part of two-man radio for 22 years.
Oh, how was that? Tell me about this. I've never done it before. So,
well, I'll give you the cynical, the skeptical question here is, it seems to me, or I'll give you the doubts I have, and I've heard it from other people, is that you're both alpha dogs. You're both lead dogs. You're both the lead guys, the number one chair guys. When you talk about two-man radio, there's always a number one chair and a number two chair. Number one guy is coming in and out of commercials and maybe reading more spots. Number two guy has more, more personality and more, maybe more of a fighter. And he'll start the fights. That was my job. You guys are both alpha dogs. What don't you think there is a natural conflict there where you're both looking at each other wondering, who's the lead here? Who's singing the lead?
I think we'll figure it out.
You've done practice shows. I read that in the trades. You've done practice shows. Yeah. How did those go?
Went great. I mean, we really vibe together very well. And if this is Stockton and Malone, or this is, Pippen and Jordan, and I'm just trying to, I don't know a lot about sports, but trying to think of like great duos from
Brady and Gronk. How about that? Brady and Gronk.
Then I think it works for the audience and it works for us too. And that's what we're really going to go for. I do a show. I've done a lot of counterpoint shows with two person shows and have gotten used to that rhythm. And that's there's a delicate touch that's required in that too, right? To disagree with someone, but never have them feel like you're attacking them, you're going after them, undermining them. I did a show with Crystal Ball, who is a leftist. I mean, she wouldn't even say she's a Democrat. She's a she is a Democrat, but I mean, she's a leftist, right? She's on the left side of the Democrat Party. And I do a show now even with Mark Lamont Hill.
He's as left as you can get.
He's a Marxist. And I got to tell you, a really affable and entertaining guy. So we really? Have a, yeah, really. And so we have a, you know, we have a good show there. Yeah, doing it on the same side, it's going to require a bit of, yes, I mean, I did, before this, I was doing up to 5 hours of solo radio a day. So I do not need, in terms of content, and no one would think this, I don't need a co-host. It wasn't something that I came up with as an idea, but when it was presented to me, I saw the merit of it, and I think Clay does too, and we're just excited to pull together a project that's going to really work well for the audience. And look, you know, I also do TV, man. I mean, you know how this is. It's a different world now. You can't create some unsinkable battleship platform that, I don't care who you are, that's all you do. You don't have to do social. You don't have to do video if you're an audio guy. You don't have to do audio if you're video. I mean, you know, everyone is on a podcast now. Everyone wants to do a streaming channel. There's all these different things. And ultimately, you're just really trying to build your audience. And there is a competitive nature to it. So you have to be multi-platform. I think that's what I'm saying. And having somebody else who carries, I think, in really expert fashion, a portion of the load every day on radio may allow me to have a little bit more energy and focus to do. I mean, I'm also doing an hour podcast every day, just me, wow, in addition to this show. And there'll be a podcast of the duo show. And I mean, look, Clay is a radio pro. The guy's got a lot of skills. I mean, he's very smooth. He's very, has a really good broad range of issues he can talk about. And, you know, so far, I mean, look, so far, I think it's going to be the best show on radio. I'll just be honest with you.
The good thing in two-man radio is you're not going to rely on callers. I mean, you could take callers, but you don't rely on them, and you don't rely on guests. And people at this point are kind of, I don't say tired of guests, but it's become formulaic, where it's just like a host with a guest, boom, boom, boom. And if you have two-man radio and you disagree, the tension leads to energy. And, you know, a good tension means good energy, and that's good radio. I had a partner, you know, Kirk Minahan, the last few years, where we were really good friends off the air. We'd have wild fights on the air, but no fights off the air, because we knew that worked on the on air. And when, you know, what eases tensions is ratings, you know, good ratings, you start making money. It's a success. You say, hey, this is, you know, this is the job, to have some disagreements, butt heads, have some laughs. And once, you know, you're off the air, you can be friends. If you understand that, and someone told me this one time, understand it's only a movie. You know, it's only a movie. If you have a good debate, and you know this from Mark Lamont Hill or Crystal, if you have a good debate, you understand you're not really, you know, taking it personal. You're not really enemies. It's just, that's part of the show, man.
Yeah, well, this is how I approach when I do my radio show. It's also whenever I write something, I try to go back. There are two thoughts, and I tell people who try to do anything in this business, two things that are my, and they're very basic, my guiding principles. Can anyone, you know, number one, can anyone tear this apart? Is what I'm saying dumb, wrong, flimsy, whatever? No, that's number one. And I look at things or listen to things that I do, you know, read things or watch or listen to it back. And I think, can someone make the argument that I'm a jackass for this, or that this is, you know, this is dumb? And I know that they're right. That's right. What I like. You know, I got to go back and do that. And then the other thing is this boring? Are people getting into this, listening or watching and thinking to themselves, meh? I mean, your point about radio, I think a lot of talk radio now, and I'm not going to name any names, a lot of talk radio is lazy. I think a lot of talk radio is, all right, let's have the same guests we've had, you know, 50 times, and going to basically repeat what I've already said to you in a monologue that more or less sounds like I'm reading it, because I probably am, because I, you know, have somebody here in the studio who's like writing out some talking points for me. And then we'll take some calls, and some of them will be okay, and some of them will be boring and crap. And then, you know, we'll sell you some stuff, and we'll just keep, you know, wash, rinse, repeat every day. I think there's a lot of that out there. And I think one of the reasons why Rush's audience was so fiercely loyal to him was that he always wanted to make it interesting for them, you know? There are a lot of things, not a lot of guests, very few guests.
True.
Not a lot of callers, very few callers. Original thought, connection. These are things that people remember. Look, I know you're a radio pro. I'm just talking about this for the audience's benefit, but these are the things we think about.
Well, someone gave me advice, simple advice one time. It says the job's very simple. Don't be boring. Don't be boring. And now, you know what's made it worse, Buck? And I've seen this, believe me, in person, is it used to be the guys, the lazy talk show guys, had the callers and the guests, and they had the TV on. And, in sports grade, they'd be watching a game or be watching the news. Now they're just looking at Twitter. They're looking at Twitter and doing a show with half their brain. And it's just, to me, it's obvious. Sometimes you can hear them, looking at the Twitter machine while they're supposed to be doing a talk show.
The two things I guess you could argue, Jerry, there are three things that are being devalued very rapidly. One is the American dollar,
right?
So one is the American dollar, and another one would be insights on news, and because they're everywhere. Everyone's always sharing all their stuff, so you can pull it. I mean, you can go on, and this is, I know people who make a real habit of this. You just go, if you've got a good list of people you follow on Twitter, you can not even read the main news stories of the day and just know what your big takeaways are, and then just blabber on. And then the third one is predictions. So the US dollar analysis and predictions, these are three things that are just everywhere and are being debased because of their abundance. There's so much of it that it's hard to value any of it.
And I'll tell you how you can stand out too, is because in this business, in podcasts especially, everyone's preaching to the choir. There aren't a lot of liberals or even moderates who tune into, Ben Shapiro or Dan Bongino or Buck Sexton. But on radio, you do get more of that. People who hate listen say, I hate Rush, but I'll listen. Or I don't like Buck or Clay, but I'm going to listen, hear what they have to say. So you get, I think that's why you get a broader audience, and you get a little more conflict. You might have a caller call up and tell you suck, where you don't hear that on podcasts at all. It's all,
Everyone's gone to their respective, safety trees, right, or, safe zones or whatever. And I think it's really bad in the media. I will say, people ask me why I would have ever gone to work at CNN as a right-wing political analyst. I mean, I've always been conservative. Everyone's always known that. People knew that even when I was in the CIA and wasn't even a public person. They're like, he's that crazy right-wing guy in the CIA.
Really?
Well,
I asked you that.
Yeah.
I think when I had you on this podcast last time, we talked about Bill Maher, and I always wonder, why do they go on there? When I see someone like you, and the audience all hates you.
Yeah, they boo you and everything else.
But I have to relish that role.
It's a little bit like, in some cultures they have a thing like a test of either a test of strength or a test of endurance. They'll run across the hot coals there are these things where you prove what you can take.
Right.
And I never want anyone to think, I will, on things that I'm passionate about, I will debate with anybody. I mean, I think that I know enough about what matters to me that I can go toe-to-toe with anyone. I'm not going to say that I'll win every out. If you're winning every debate encounter you do, you're either not debating smart enough people, or you're not debating enough, because you're, inevitably, especially with disparities in how much airtime you get and the duration, right? I mean, people will say, oh, why didn't you slam that guy? I'm like, why didn't I slam him? We did a 3-minute TV hit. I got to speak for 30 seconds. If you want me to just start saying that, he's dumb and ugly and his mother doesn't love him, like what am I supposed, what are you supposed to do at some point? You're trying to make a point. You're trying to, again, bring value to the audience. I worry, and I know I'm getting on a little tangent, I worry that increasingly what's happened in conservative and in liberal media for sure, but in conservative media, is that the value we bring is that our audience is always comfortable.
Right.
We don't debate, and we don't say things they don't want to hear that we believe to be true. Like, I'm not saying things to be provocative that I think are untrue, but I'll just give you an example, Jerry. I was always a very clear vocal critic of Trump having his children, one of whom was actually a friend of mine growing up. I mean, I knew her not super well, but we were social acquaintances. I was a big critic of it. I said, you can't have your kids as the top White House advisors, because it first of all, it looks bad. And also it means you're not going to be objective, right? Right. And it's like whenever a parent, you know, I mean, you've all seen this. I mean, do you have kids, Jerry?
Yes, I do.
Oh, so you actually know about kids. But I've seen this before. You know, a kid will run up to another kid in the playground and, you know, whack the kid over the head with a pail. And the parent is, you know, why did you let your child hit my child's pail with his head? You know, people don't see things objectively, right?
Right. That's true.
Trump didn't see things in the White House sometimes objectively. And anybody who's telling you, they'll all speak to you about this off the record, or they'll speak to you about it without attribution. But they all know that it was true. And I'm just telling you, the conservative audience got mad at me for it. And I kept telling them, and there's my own audience, my own people, the people that see me on the street and hug me and are like, thank you for your work. Some of them, not all of them, were, why don't you understand Trump? You know, they did a lot of rationalization of this. And I was like, guys, I'm not a never Trumper. I'm not one of these, you know, I don't know what, we're on a podcast, right? I could say whatever I want. I was about to start dropping with
bulwark.
I feel like salty language is acceptable in the Jerry Callahan podcast.
It is. You could insert
some of the words for me, but I'm not one of those like Lincoln Project, never Trumper lunatics. I'm the guy, I'm trying to be, you know, maybe even like the assistant coach or, you know, the special teams coach who's getting the team fired up at halftime because I want them to win the game. That's how I tried to approach some aspects of the Trump presidency. And I got a lot of heat from our team for it, Jerry, and it was disappointing. I'm like, do you guys want the truth? By the way, I was right.
I went through the same thing. All right, I still do. When I say I didn't like Trump's tweets, they were stupid. They were juvenile and they didn't help. And I had a couple friends, hardcore Trumpers, listeners, and it, you know, you got to stop attacking Trump. And I go, attacking Trump? I just don't like, you know, when he tweets something about whatever, about, you know, Joy Behar with a bunch of exclamation points and misspellings. That doesn't help. And I think I've been proven right. The dumb tweets, the mean tweets didn't help the cause. One last thought on your new partner and you, the relationship, the dynamic is, if you get, you know, you really get down and dirty, just point out that he voted for Obama twice. Just bring that up, you know, like twice a day.
Clay is my brother in the foxhole, man. Whatever rounds are sent his way, I'm going to throw my body in the way. That's how this is going to go.
I don't know. Obama twice. I'm not sure I'll ever be able to get my mind around that. I guess he admits it, right? He's not denying it. If that were me, I'd deny it. I'd deny it. I'd be like Hunter Biden. It's all a haze. I mean, I was on so many drugs, I don't remember what happened. We'll get to Hunter. I got a couple of questions about that. But you are an intelligence guy, an intelligence community guy, an expert CIA guy. And I think this is one of your, you know, one of the ways these doors open for you.
Yeah. I used to be really squared away. I mean, I honestly knew a lot more than all the former defense and CIA analysts. There are a lot more now who are actually legit. Like there are some guys who go on Fox. I'm like, that guy's the real deal. When I got into this 10 years ago, I had just come out of the CIA and they had all these guys who were, you know, retired Air Force lieutenant colonels who left in 1992 talking about, you know, Al-Qaeda in northern Iraq or something. And I'm like, well, I just got back from working CTC, CIA, Counterterrorism Center. I don't think your lieutenant colonel from the Air Force who hasn't been in any kind of government service in 20 years, CNN, knows what the hell he's talking. So to be clear, now there's like former directors and, you know, everyone's gotten in the game. I was early, though.
But I guess now we're all pretty much convinced that the FBI has been corrupted, the CIA, you know, the deep state is real. And our mutual friend John Cardillo calls the FBI a domestic terrorist organization. I don't think I'm ready to go that far. I don't know about you, but in the last week, we heard Biden and Merrick Garland both say that the FBI says white supremacy is the biggest threat to the homeland, which is obviously silly. Obviously, it's a lie. It's nonsense. My question, simple one. Is Biden and Merrick Garland, are they the ones lying here, or are they actually being told by the FBI that white supremacy is the biggest threat? Which is it? Who's lying?
They're being told.
Is that for real? Real?
It's real. Yeah, they're being told this. I mean, this is. I know. I still have friends who are on the inside, and look, there's a lot of the diversity and inclusion, left wing woke stuff that has infiltrated the intelligence community, that has infiltrated the FBI specifically, that's real. Wow. And you have to remember that to go to work for the federal government, especially as a career, you're going to get a lot of people who believe in government power and want it to be bigger than it is, broader than it is. Also, they want the government to provide their paycheck and their health care and everything else. And look, I know there are great folks and people yell at me, well, what about our military? Look, there are great people who serve, and I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, in the intelligence community and in the FBI as well. But if you're asking, are there bureaucrats who rise to the top of these institutions who are people of the ideological left? I mean, not only am I telling you the answer is yes, even more so than the public realizes, we've got plenty of proof of it. I mean, John Brennan is basically a commie. I mean, that guy's out of his mind.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, you look like Mike Morrell, a guy that I actually worked for at one point in the agency. These guys are libs. They're leftists, and they're running these places. So to say that there are, I mean, I actually use the term cabal in the Trump White House about the FBI deep state stuff. And someone in the Trump White House, very senior in it, was like, we like that term. And I started hearing it a lot afterwards. But that's really the way to consider it. You only need a handful of really devoted leftist authoritarians inside the federal apparatus, a federal bureaucracy. And you find yourself in a place where they're influencing top down major decisions about some of these political cases. So you can still have a lot of folks at the lower levels who are, you know, a lot of guys and gals show up to the FBI because, yeah, they want to stop like child molesters and cartel guys and kidnappers and God bless them. But they're doing that in the field office in Omaha or in San Diego or whatever. The people that are running the show in D.C., right, a lot of them are leftists. And I mean the careerists, not the appointees.
I know you saw this. I'm sure you talked about it. Tucker Carlson's segment.
Yeah, people call me Tucker all the time. It happens.
Tucker Carlson's segment the other night where he said, not only did the FBI infiltrate the mob on January 6th, they organized it. And I'm watching it live going, holy crap, this is a bombshell. Here's my take, Buck. In a year, 2 years, 5 years, we're going to look at January 6th a lot different than we did on January 7th or January 10th or even today. We're going to learn a lot more. It's hard to learn because obviously the mainstream media is covering it up. The Democrats are using it. There's, you know, two or three reporters who even report on it, like Julie Kelly. But do you believe the FBI actually organized this mob? And if they did, are we ever going to officially learn, you know, how that all went down?
I think it's a little far from what the evidence that I've seen would say right now. So the FBI organized it. I don't get so many people. It's tough to keep something like that under wraps this long. Were there agents, agents provocateur, or were there people who were there and trying to throw fuel on a fire that would have existed independently of them, but, you know, made it worse? Knew that this was an opportunity, knew that they, I think that's very likely. In fact, I've seen some people present evidence that that happened. Were there FBI informants among the 1,000 or so people that, you know, engaged in what is essentially most of them engaged in riot and trespass. Some engaged in assault of law enforcement officers and destruction of property. None of the protesters murdered anybody. We all know that. And the people in the media and in the Democrat Party keep lying about that. Do I think that there were probably agents, FBI informants, not agents, FBI informants.
Informants, right.
Who were, you know, pushing.
Encouraging.
I can tell you. Yeah. Come on, guys. I mean, that doesn't even surprise. Like, I would assume that was happening.
Your advice to someone
who organized it, that I think is further than what the, you know, that the FBI was a prime mover behind this. I don't see that yet. I'm not saying it can't be, but I don't see the evidence for it.
I have a feeling it's going to be a major theme of your show going forward. It's just how involved they were and just how much we don't know about that, about January 6th. Hell, they haven't, and no one's gone to trial. Half these guys are still in solitary. We're not getting the whole story. And when we do, I'm wondering, it's just how big it's going to be and how crazy it's going to be.
I can tell you that this has been a tool, the same way that Russia collusion was a big lie that was used to, unfortunately, in many ways, successfully slow down, hamper, harass and delay the Trump administration from its goals. I mean, that White House was under siege by that special counsel. So while they didn't get Trump out of office, they were, and people, again, I tell them the truth. That was all success, folks. I mean, the whole Russia collusion lie. Who got sent to prison for that? Nobody.
Buck,
what happened?
They took the house. They took the house in 2018. I'm not sure they would have done that without the Russian collusion, you know.
So I'm here to tell everybody that, you know, look, they feel like that was a victory, maybe not as far as they wanted, but it was still a victory. The left, no the question. Anti-Trump left. And now with this January 6th situation, this is the emotional and psychological justification for treating Republicans as evil and worthy of scorn across the board. We are all supposed that the narrative here is meant to be that anybody who supported Trump and of course still supports Trump or Trumpism to this day is tainted by the January 6th insurrection, which they call it. But and this is preposterous on its face because, I mean, if you're going to have an insurrection in today's world with people who are unarmed, it's not going to last very long.
Right, it's the first
a non-lethal insurrection in the Capitol when you have Metro Police, Capitol Hill Police, the FBI. I mean, we could sit here for 30 minutes going through all the armed government agents who can and in many cases did show up there to clear things out. So it's absurd, but they're going to use it because you and I, Jerry, we are bad people in the eyes of libs because we're, you know, they'll use the term insurrectionist now as a general pejorative, which is why I love calling them commies. Cause I'm like, fine, if we're going to do this, if we're just going to let it rip, let's let it rip. You guys are a bunch of commies.
It's you know, the first unarmed insurrection in history. And you're right. I mean, think of everything worked. The two impeachments, they worked. You know, the Kavanaugh, that worked. I mean, it just inflicted enough damage that they could advance their agenda. But a couple more things before I know you got to go. You got to prep for Monday. The trip for Biden that he just completed, it was a disaster by all accounts. And one thing it did for me, and we talked about things we have said and done that piss off the MAGA crowd. I'm watching that and saying, we can't have another 78-year-old president. I don't want Donald J. Trump in 4 years. I don't want another 78, 80, 82-year-old president. It's too old.
I don't care that the left has no principles, Jerry. I still think that they're important. And when you establish something, a baseline of a straightforward rule, guideline, truth, whatever you want to call it, like we really shouldn't have an 80-year-old plus president, period. Shouldn't happen. There's a country of 330 million people. There's a lot of folks out there who can do this job. I'm not going to change on that because, oh, well, Trump, there are other people in the Republican Party who are already showing that they're very capable of governing well, not just. And look, I see, Jerry, you and I thought some of the tweets were hilarious. I think there were too many. I think you should have reined some of them in. But I did like some of the tweets. So you and I can come back and battle that out another time. But on this point, yeah, it's just reality, man. 78's too old to be president, whether it's a Republican, I don't care. And by the way, he'd be 80 while he was in office. Joe Biden's too old to be president. Democrats have no principles, so they're not embarrassed by this. It's just a power play for them. And they figure, well, this is great because now we have some guy who'll just do whatever the machinery of the Democrat Party wants. But he's too old. We all see it.
I mean, you can't deliver mail. You can't teach kids. You can't drive a truck, but you can be president. It's just madness. What date? Give me the date that Kamala Harris ascends to the throne. When do you think it happens?
Oh, I've been. But see, now we're falling into there's a lot of speculation, too much speculation out there. But no, this is informed speculation, Jerry. I think that I don't think Joe Biden runs for a second term. I think he takes it through the midterms. And then I think he just says, you know, I've gotten tired and for health reasons, I'm going to step down. Kamala takes over. Then she gets to run as an incumbent. Way better. Way better.
Man, you're going to have a blast. What? And so am I. Just Kamala Harris as commander in chief, this woman who can't handle, you know, a simple question from, you know, one of her supporters, Lester Holt, about the border. And she can't handle that. A woman who wasn't popular enough to make it to the primaries, to even participate in the first primary. She was that unpopular. She was trailing Liz Warren among black voters in the polls. You don't get less popular than that. And she's going to be president. But all right, before I let you go, I got to show you. You asked me if I have kids, and I'm looking around. See this right here? This is drawn by my son when he was a little kid. That's me and him and Jack in a kayak when he was a little kid. I'm selling this for $500,000. An art dealer is putting that up for sale in New York. What do you think?
Good enough for Hunter Biden.
Better than anything.
Way better than whatever Hunter did.
That's better than Hunter Biden's things. I couldn't believe when I heard, and you know this, but you see the video, he blows his thing through a straw. That you can't make that up. I mean, that's just so unbelievable. He blows paint around. Hunter's
blown a lot of things through a straw.
does he know that we're
into his nostrils, I believe, but yes.
No, you are in New York. Why don't you go by that gallery and check it out and make a bid?
We got Father's Day coming up, Jerry. Maybe I'll send you something nice. You behave
that's
yourself.
A good stunt. Buck Sexton bids on Hunter Biden's. I'm pretty sure you'd have
to. I don't have the bankroll for it, man. I haven't started the big show yet. You have to lend me some money.
Are you? You're not one of these people who says, like I hear people like Matt Walsh and others say, you know, don't get distracted by Hunter Biden. It's not important. I'm like, what? I mean, literally, we have, as you know, Tony Bobulinski talking about kicking back to the big guy, and you don't want to talk about it. That's crazy. And you're going to be consistent because you said Ivanka and Kushner should not be in the White House. I mean, I assume you are going to talk plenty about Hunter, because as you know, there's a lot more on that laptop that we haven't seen or heard yet.
My friends were the ones who found the laptop. Let me tell you, I was getting early previews, and those are things you can't unsee.
Are you with Hannity on this? Because I've heard him and others, including Miranda Devine, say there's a lot more and it gets worse. Are you?
Yeah, but it doesn't get worse in a way that it blows back on Pops and creates a problem for him. By the way, I'm not an expert on the hard drive. I don't have it. I mean, I know I have friends who have the hard drive.
Wow.
But I don't have it, or they have a mirror of it, I should say. But I haven't seen anything. Remember, it has to be political corruption. It has to be big enough that it goes. If it's just him being more of a screw up, yeah, we'll talk about it, but it doesn't move the needle against the big guy.
It does move the needle against the media, as Clay has tweeted. It's amazing. The New York Times has a 15-year-old girl on page one because she said the same word as Hunter, and they don't get a mention. He doesn't get a mention in the New York Times. So it's always good to point out how corrupt the media is. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. Would you do me a favor? Because you have a very esteemed and astute audience. Tell them that if they had been Rush listeners, they got to give us a shot 12-3. Okay.
Excellent. 12-3. What the show's called? Do I have this right? The Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. I think that reflects well on you, Buck, because I was always the second name. You know why? Because I don't have such a big ego that I demanded to be the first name. Now we know you didn't do that, so I give you credit. He's humble, but he's
focused on my content, folks. I make it worth everybody's time.
Good luck Monday and going forward, Buck. We will be listening. Thank you, my friend. Jerry. And we'll talk to you down the road.
Good to see you, my man. Take care.
You too, Buck. That is Buck Sexton from the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. It starts Monday at noon on like 9,000 stations. It was funny because originally Dan Bongino was named from one network as being Rush's replacement, but I think he's only on like 120 stations. Buck and Clay are on 400 stations on these premier stations, which are stations that carried Rush. So I think they're actually the real Rush replacement. I like Bongino and he'll do well, and it'll be an interesting competition. And Dana Lash is on some Entercom stations, and our friend Tom Shattuck is on one Entercom station from 10 to 2. So he'll be going against Clay and Buck and Clay for a couple hours every day. But I think Buck and Clay are going to get most of the attention. And we've talked about this, Cullinan and I and Shattuck and Turtle Boy for, you know, months. And it is a strange pairing because, again, they're both alpha dogs. They're both conservatives. Will they fight? I'm not sure if they'll really battle, but I know it'll work because the one man thing, if it was just Buck, I'd say good luck to him. I like him. Or just Clay, I'd say good luck to him. Bongino, good luck. But I think you know what you get with one guy. That's the problem. You know what you get with one guy. And if it's just one guy taking calls, having a guest, coming up next, we have some, former FBI guy to talk about this. You might listen, you might enjoy it, but you never get surprised. You know, they never take you by surprise. There's never a twist, there's never a suspenseful moment where you go, wow, I didn't know it was going to go there. When you have two guys and one guy thinks one thing and another guy, and they battle it out, then the callers call and support one or the other, and they battle it out. You have this natural tension that increases the energy level, as we talked about. So I like the fact that they're taking a chance. It's a little bit of a gamble to have these two guys. If you pick one guy, it's just safe and it's same old thing. So we'll see how they do. But they're both smart. They work hard, obviously. Buck is a crazy hard worker. And they're curious. You know, you got to be curious. You got to work hard and you got to be smart. And so I think it works. And I'm not sure what station it's on in, you know, your market, but you'll find it and it'll be online. It'll be on social media. So they'll be big. But that is Buck Sexton. And I think of him as the one chair guy because he's a definite one chair guy. But I guess Travis is a one chair guy also. And maybe they'll share it. They'll split it and it'll just naturally take its course. Naturally, we will. We will see how that goes, but check them out Monday at noon. And you can check us out Monday, hopefully by 10 a.m. Hopefully by 10 a.m. We got a little transition period with the producers, as everybody knows. And Cullinane came back today from New York and, you know, helped me out. But I'm not sure how much longer he's going to be available before he goes, you know, to the dark side. But Cullinane, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for saving us. I'm glad you had a good time in New York. We'll have to hear more about it next week.
I can't divulge anything that happened in New York, actually.
What are you going to wait and talk about it on your new show?
No, I just, you know, it's stuff that I should just keep close to me. You know, I don't need to.
I saw you on Twitter. You said you couldn't tell whether you had too many Pink Whitneys or not. Were you sober?
I was probably at the time you saw that I was sober, but the night got away from me. Let's just say that the night got away.
You don't stay up very late. I'm surprised you were.
It was like midnight, wasn't it? Yeah, and I got your new producer who's chirping me at 3 o'clock in the morning, freaking out. I mean, I'm just trying to get to bed. I'm just trying to be a company man.
I appreciate you helping him out. God knows he needed it, and we needed it. But you know, you got the job done. And now, don't you have time off before you start with Kirk?
I start with Barstool next week to get everything in order, and then Kirk's back on the 28th.
That's a lot of time. That's a huge break for you. I mean, you're not diving right back in. You have plenty of time to help.
Plenty
me.
Of time to get stuff. Plenty of time. I'm there for you, Jerry. You knew that. You know, I haven't deleted your phone number yet, so don't worry about it.
Well, you got Buck Sexton's phone number too, and he's like, he's already kind of a big deal, but he's going to be real big in a few months if this thing takes off and people, you know, and you know what? They're smart enough. They're going to make news. They're going to, you know, have guys on. They're going to make news and create buzz. And I think it's going to work, but we'll see. I'm a little disappointed. I didn't know he was looking for, you know, a washed up old sports radio morning guy. If I did, I would have put my application in, but he chose Clay Travis, and he's going for that Southern audience. You know, he goes after that SEC crowd. But all right, thanks for coming back. You do look a little hungover, I have to say.
It was a long train ride home.
It's like happy hungover. You're happy, right? You had a good time.
Oh, great time. I mean, anytime there's free booze, you got to
get it. And they welcomed you into the Barstool family. Did you go to some expensive steakhouse?
I went to an expensive place. I was sitting next to the guy from Roman Swipe. So I was talking about my sexual health, which is always a joyous occasion. So,
I mean, it's too late to sell this podcast, but you know, Barstool doesn't need you to sell their part. They have plenty of people. Did you sell me to anybody?
Yeah, I put a good word in. Don't excellent. You worry about that. Yes. I can't wait to hear you do Roman Swipe ads. That's going to be fantastic.
And were you actually ordering Pink Whitneys?
Do
you actually
No. Those? What was I having last night? There was like a special I don't drink margaritas, but they had it and I grabbed it. And
Let's go down.
It was dangerous. Right.
Well, again, I'm glad you had a good trip. And I'm glad you came back to help me out here today. And I'm glad Buck Sexton joined us. Thanks to DCU and Shea Concrete and Allied Paving. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is a special weekend edition of the Callahan Podcast. Check out Buck and Clay Monday at noon. Check us out first. But this is the Callahan Podcast. I'm Jerry Callahan, and we will talk to you again Monday morning.
Why am I stopping? No one else stops.
Can I go home?
The Jerry Callahan Podcast.